From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of December 2016. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Scott Irwin will be here to preview the Illinois Farm Economic Summits, the annual event where the agricultural economist and myself tour the state of Illinois. And as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, a really good discussion with Eric Snodgrass of Agrible from right here in Champaign-Urbana on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Mike Zuzlow now joins us to take a look at what happened in Chicago today. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Todd, I thought maybe some of my ginger ale that I drink in the afternoon fermented on me, because when I sat down on my desk after I took a few swigs, I saw wheat up 16 on the close. Is that real or not?
I don't know. I was going to ask you whether that was real. The rest of the contracts in both the soft red and the hard red are all higher. So do we know why it happened?
Yeah, I think there's several reasons that gave us this type of an end of the week bounce. I think number one was we are at the end of the week. The trade, I think, finally looked over at the crude oil and the dollar markets and what they'd been doing this week, especially in light of the fact that bonds were recovering. In other words, the bond yields were no longer going higher. That was scaring some commodity guys this week, it sounded like to me. Other than the end of the week spread unwinding and that factor, I think maybe the commercials rolling out of their short December contracts into the March maybe helped the trade as well.
All right. So what would the crude oil up above $50 have to do with wheat rallying 16 cents?
Well, I think first and foremost, it helps pressure the dollar. And certainly with some of the supply figures that we heard out of Australia for wheat and also South America for wheat and even Canada for wheat, the trade is looking for a weaker dollar to help our demand. And, you know, I've always gone by the rule of thumb that demand puts lows in the markets and supply puts highs in the market. So if the market, like we saw this week, at the end of the month on Tuesday, Wednesday time period, took out in the wheat market and the corn market their monthly lows from October and November. When I see something like that happen, I'm going to guess and suppose that most of the time that's going to be due to a demand fundamental. And I think the dollar is looked upon as a demand fundamental, quite frankly, Todd. And I think when the crude oil rallies, the trade sees a more balanced supply of crude oil in 2017, that maybe makes the funds a little bit more easier to come into commodities, and it puts a little bit more pressure on the dollar. So I think that's the biggest correlation that I can find.
So do you see the dollar continuing to drop, although it's on its highs still at the moment? And will we build in inflation at the same time?
Well, I think so. I mean, this is where the wheat market and the gold market have not portrayed an inflationary bias. And there's a simple rule why that is, and that's because of these bond yields. As the bond yields go up and the dollar goes up, the denominated debt that emerging markets carry, which is about $3.5 trillion in U.S. denominated debt, that automatically goes up, and that puts a lot of pressure on their credit and on their lending, and therefore puts a lot of pressure on their trade and whether they're going to buy our goods or not. And so I think this is what the trade is having to work out in this post-election mindset. I think that the Federal Reserve is on board with inflation, and I think that the Trump policies and the people that he's picking for his cabinet also are on board for deficit spending and inflationary bias. And I think the Chinese in 2017 will be more in the mindset of wanting to keep their currency stronger, not weaker, which also should be more buying power for them as well. So I know it's a long-winded answer, but I think 2017 is going to be a lot better fertile environment for inflation than the last 6 or 7 years.
So what I think you just told me was that the price of commodities might be higher, inflationary. However, that the Chinese would continue to hold the line on their currency, giving it buying power, so you would have a higher priced commodities and they'd still buy as much as they have. Is that at good prices.
Yes, exactly right. I think that the big thing in 2016 that we had working against us was China let their currency go to an 8-year low against the U.S. dollar. So other than soybeans, they were actually pressing out more exports in the commodity realm than we had expected them to do. And crude oil, refined unleaded gas, many bulk commodities they have become big exporters in because they've allowed their currency to go down to an 8-year low. Now, the good news is we've seen the copper bounce, we've seen the crude oil bounce, and I think that does set us up for a better, like I said, more fertile ground for investors and inflation to come in 2017. Biggest question mark, and we talked about this on the corn panel, is whether the European Union will remain and whether that will put a fork in the euro currency. In other words, that becomes a major sell in early 2017, and that gives credence to the dollar. And that's probably the biggest fear that I have right now in terms of sidetracking or derailing what you and I are talking about right now.
So right now, your suggestion is across the commodities, at least in the grains and the oil seeds, a little inflation. China's currency is worth more, so they'll continue to buy at the higher prices. And then we've got a little bounce in the wheat market at this time. Demand should be good, so you're feeling pretty nice about the markets, I think.
In the medium term, I'd say the only caveat I would throw at you is in the short term. A week from today, we get our next WASDE report, and the chart technicals for the soybeans don't look nearly as healthy as they did the beginning of this week. And I do note that given what the crude oil and the dollar were able to do. So I didn't like necessarily what the technicals look like going into next week's report for soybeans. Nove beans went back below on a close from their June high, which they had taken out a week or so ago, that 10.22¾ level. So I'm kind of on a red alert as we head into Monday's trade as to whether I need to get some more 17 hedges in place for the soybean complex.
Somebody got their wings. Hey,
sorry about that.
Okay, so on the soybeans, you're on a red alert. November tends to be kind of a blasé USDA report. Do you think there might be something there, whether it's a bigger U.S. yield or something else that might really push that market lower?
No, I think you bring up a huge point. My model for the grain price lead month futures being at this 10.35 and getting up to 10.50 level in beans would suggest the trade's already down to about a 4.25 carryover in the United States ending stocks. And I'm assuming that that's because the trade is pricing in better demand for us in the export market, but also maybe some trimming of bushels here in the South American market because of some of this weather that has been impacting certain parts of Argentina and Brazil. So I think that's a big issue that the trade's going to have to contend with.
All right. Anything else before I let you go for the afternoon?
I would only say the other thing to look at is the corn did regain the lows from the October-November lows from the monthly chart. I'd love to see some follow-through and a technical buy signal on Monday, Tuesday there. That might open up the upside for the corn as we head into Friday's report, something would be very welcome because the trade tends to be pretty negative, the corn and the wheat, as we get closer and closer to a monthly WASDE report. So watch those early week technicals on the corn.
All right. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzula with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. In today's agricultural news, North Dakota Senator Heidi Heitkamp is slated to have a sit-down with President-elect Donald Trump at the transition's de facto headquarters, Trump Tower in New York City. It's a surprising meeting with a sitting Democratic senator that's fueling rampant speculation the farm state lawmaker might be in the running for a cabinet position. Heitkamp is, of course, a first-term senator up for re-election in 2018 in a state that voted overwhelmingly for Trump this cycle. There really isn't any intel suggesting Heitkamp is running for the ag secretary's position, but that sure didn't stop the Twitterverse from speculating about it. The Washington Post, citing a source familiar with the arrangements, says that the meeting would discuss potential gigs at the Energy and Interior Departments. Heitkamp added to the prognostication by issuing a statement Thursday, saying she appreciated the chance to meet the president-elect. Whatever job I do, I hope to work with the president-elect and all of my colleagues in Congress on both sides of the aisle to best support my state. Well, let's stay with President-elect Donald Trump and his narrowing list of candidates for the key post in his cabinet, including Secretary of Agriculture. On that list, Kansas Governor Sam Brownback, former Agriculture Department Deputy Secretary Chuck Connor, Texas Ag Commissioner Sid Miller, and former Georgia Governor Sonny Perdue, the latest name circulated to become the Environmental Protection Agency Administrator, include Jeffrey Holmstead, a former Deputy EPA Chief, Robert Grady, involved in the 1990 Clean Air Act amendments, and Myron Ebel of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and for U.S. Trade Representative Dan DiMicco, a former steel company executive and critic of Chinese trade practices. American Farm Bureau Federation Director Dale Moore is eager to find out who Trump will pick for these posts.
The Secretary of Agriculture, Secretary of Interior, EPA, USTR, you know, those in particular for agriculture are very important cabinet positions. And so we're very anxious to find out who it is we are going to be working with as the new administration comes to town, you know, come January 20th.
However, Farm Bureau and other agriculture groups are pretty reluctant to discuss the merits of those being considered. President-elect Trump promised during his campaign to appoint a farmer-friendly EPA administrator. Well, Senators Roberts and Stabenow remain divided over vetting Trump nominees. Senator Agriculture Chairman Pat Roberts and Ranking Member Debbie Stabenow aren't seen eye to eye on the upcoming vetting of the next Agriculture Secretary. Roberts served Stabenow notice Thursday that Trump's cabinet picks will not go through more vetting than those of President Barack Obama's. Roberts' message was delivered in a public statement issued right after Stabenow led a press conference with top Democrats, calling for a new requirement that all nominees turn over the last 3 years of their tax records as part of the Senate vetting process. Only three Senate committees now require nominees to submit tax records, the senior Democrat said, and the Agriculture Committee is not one of them. Roberts said he further argued that the vetting process already includes broad inquiries into nominees' finances and that there's no reason to change course. And finally today, the Agriculture Department yesterday closed a fact-finding mission in a case of rogue genetically engineered wheat discovered in a field in Washington State this summer, determining that there is no evidence the crop has entered the food supply. The USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, or APHIS, worked with the farmer who discovered the biotech wheat growing in an unplanted field to take measures to ensure it wasn't moved into the marketplace because the federal government has not approved any GE wheat varieties. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Scott Irwin, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus. Scott and I will be traveling along with a whole crew from ACES Ag Econ the week of December the 12th. We'll be in Champaign, in DeKalb, Peoria, Springfield, and Mount Vernon on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. I always look forward to going on this set of annual meetings. Scott, how about you?
I do, too. Can't wait to get out and see all of our friends in Illinois Ag. It's always a highlight for everyone on the Farm Doc team.
So we'll be taking folks like Todd Keithy, Dale Latz, Nick Paulson, and Gary Schnitke, along with Jonathan Kappas, out with us. What kinds of things are they going to be discussing this year?
Well, we're going to start off with the outlook for crop and livestock prices by Daryl Good, and then we'll be going into the financial situation here in Illinois agriculture, looking then at some interesting issues on farm leases as people attempt to manage the margin squeeze that we're going through. And then we're going to take a look at farm policy and how the new farm programs are evolving, some look at credit conditions, and then I'm going to bring up the rear, taking a look at long-term weather trends and the prospects for a recovery in the price of corn.
This event is well attended by bankers and farmers both. They can register online, is that right?
That's right. Just go to the FarmDoc website, and there's a button that says IFAS, and it'll take you to the registration site. It's $65 online, $70 if you mail it in.
75 if you walk in. So
correct. 70, thanks for mentioning that.
70 is the average price for the going rate, depending on how you manage to register. And you can register by making a phone call. And if you want to do that, you can call this number to make that registration, 217-244-9687. Again, that's 217-244-9687. But registrations are closing December the 5th, so not very far away.
That's right. You've just got a few days now left to register. Our locations are beginning to fill up, so we're excited about that. Looks like we're going to have a great crowd again. As always, we have, I think, a pretty fast pace. It's a half-day program. We start a little after 8. We end right around noon, have lunch, and then everybody can still have their afternoons. It's a format that works well. So, especially when you're leading.
Yes. Yeah, so, oh, thank you. So one of the things that's really interesting this year, and I think probably people may want to come out and say thank you, at least, is that this is the last time Darryl Good will go out with us. Mm-hmm. As an employee of the University of Illinois, he retired. He's a professor emeritus here on campus, but has been working part-time for a few years now, and he's going to hang up the Spurs. And
yep, he's really doing it this year. It's pretty historic. He's been a pretty well-known figure in Illinois agriculture for about 40 years now, and he's going to continue maybe for another 6 months or a year, some writing and helping us on the side. But his kind of active role that he's had, he's having his second retirement now, and this one is a real one.
This one's the real one. So folks who want to come out and say thank you, they could do that at the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. That might be a nice thing to fill all of those venues up with more than we've ever had before, I would think.
That would be awesome as a great tribute to someone who has given enormously to Illinois Ag.
Hey, thanks so much. Looking forward to traveling with you and with Darryl and the rest of the crew. That's the week of December the 12th.
Thank you very much. Look forward to seeing everybody.
Scott Irwin is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, and we will be traveling on the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. We'll be right here in Champaign at the iHotel and Conference Center on the 12th. That's a Monday. Tuesday up in DeKalb at Veranda's Banquet Center. On Wednesday in Peoria at the Paradise Hotel and Casino. In Springfield, we'll be at the Crown Plaza. That's on Thursday and Friday. The 16th, we'll be down in Mount Vernon at the Holiday Inn. Again, our speakers for the event include Scott Irwin, who we just talked to, agricultural economist here, Darryl Good, Todd Keithy, Dale Latz, Nick Polson, and Gary Schnitke. You can register online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look over on the right-hand side of the page. You'll see IFAS, Illinois Farm Economic Summit there. The cost is $65 if you register online, $70 if you make the phone call to us at 217-244-9687, or if you show up that day, $75. If you're going to register early, you need to do that by December the 5th. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. Eric Snodgrass is here. He's with Agrible to talk about the weather forecast. Eric, thanks so much for being with us today. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's start with the drought in the southeast and the fires there. What are the concerns that we might have other than the problems that's created in the southeast so far?
Yeah, you know, the big problems with that drought has been really on agriculture in the south, plus the fires that have broken out. And the ag industries that are really impacted have been basically in the peanut and the cotton harvest. But, you know, what happened was last week on Monday, we basically had a big low-pressure system that got going in, like, Montana, Iowa, and in that area. And what that did was that really did a lot to shift the wind direction out of the southeast. So this drought's really set up big time. It's at its highest stages. Some places haven't had rain, meaningful rain, in as much as 70 days in parts of Alabama and parts of Georgia, parts of Tennessee, and places like that. Well, that big low-pressure system switched the winds, and they now came out of the southeast. And those southeast winds basically blew those fires back to the northwest, which took them into Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge, a very popular tourist destination. The thing that I thought was most amazing was that in the Gatlinburg weather station, they recorded an overnight temperature of 118 degrees because of the heat of those fires. And as one of the fires passed through Gatlinburg, it caught several vehicles on fire and actually was hot enough to melt the alloys used in the wheels. Well, that fire and that drought, you know, is that much of a concern for us a little bit further to the north of where that drought set up? And I'll say this, it's pretty difficult for a drought in the southeast to migrate into Illinois, into Indiana, into Iowa. And that's because in order for it to move this way, it's going to take a pretty strong set of weather systems that are going to help to migrate it to the north and west. And to do that, that means you've got to have winds coming from the Gulf of Mexico. And we've got those winds basically hit at the end of this week, and that basically kicked off a whole bunch of showers and storms. And so while some of those locations were having some of their driest weather on record, they then got 2, 3, 4 inches of rain when that whole system shifted to come out of the southeast. So my point is that while that drought is awful, and it is, and it's going to take a lot to undo, fear of it migrating into Indiana and Ohio and in Illinois is I wouldn't be as afraid of it as I would be if there were drought setting up in Missouri or drought setting up in Nebraska for those states.
And then let's come a little closer to here. What do we have for next week? It looks like kind of cold conditions, maybe a little rain too.
Yeah, we got two things I'm on the lookout for. First, over the weekend, we got a system that's going to basically come out of southern Texas and kind of track up through the Texas, Arkansas, Louisiana area. And usually, when low-pressure systems like this kind of come out of Texas and go to the south of Illinois, we get hammered with snow. But it's not going to be quite cold enough yet for this one to produce snow. So I'm expecting really miserable conditions, you know, Sunday, Monday, when we're going to have this thing coming through. Cold rain. Not good. But here's what we're really watching. This is the big picture. Right now, setting up over Alaska, we finally had a breakdown in the weather patterns, such that really, really cold air is going to slide out of Alaska along the western side of Canada. It's going to scoot right along the front range of the Rocky Mountains and invade the Great Plains in the Midwest. This is going to get here sometime around December 6th, 7th, and 8th. And that's going to be the first time in a long time that we're going to see a good long stretch of days of below average temperatures. And so it's going to be a big shift because remember, boy, November was incredibly warm compared to average, and so was October. And we've talked how it's impacted folks put nitrogen down on fields. Well, here comes this big blast of cold air, and it's going to feel bitterly cold simply because it's been so warm.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate you talking with us today. Good luck traveling this week.
Yeah, thank you very much.
That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He's with Agrible from right here in Urbana-Champaign. I'm Todd Gleason.